Matt and Christopher, you've been very adventurous with your various recordings, especially doing arrangements of Radiohead and Arcade Fire. This new album, Troika, explores music of the Slavic soul. Can you elaborate on what your musical intentions were with this project?
I think the distinction between Troika and, let's say, our first collaboration, Shuffle, Play, Listen, was the fact that we're not just dealing with straddling genres, but that we are straddling three separate generations of Russian music written in exile and in protest. I think that's the most important distinction.
So you've got some standard works by Rachmaninoff, Prokofiev, and Shostakovich, blending them with some unexpected repertoire. How do you manage to make a connection between this variety?
Well, I mean, they all, in various ways, suffered repression and you know, had to be in exile, or, I mean, as Chris mentioned. So, I mean, that's what ties them all together. But also, you know, even in the Pussy Riot, you know, which is a punk band, not easy to for us cello piano duo to find music that we could adapt to our combination. I mean, there's a lot of screaming and sort of non-melodic sort of material there. And yet the piece that they were actually imprisoned for is a piece that uses a Russian Orthodox hymn as a basis for the, you know, the kind of recurring theme through the piece. And so we were drawn to that musically, not only as a really powerful story, you know, sort of historical moment. I mean, that's sort of the most dramatic form of you know, repressing art and speech.
And all the composers involved are dealing with straddling not just political or repressive lines, but also media lines. So, for instance, the pairing of the Shostakovich Waltz number 2, basically known much better in its iteration in the soundtrack of Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, the Troika, the title track from the Lieutenant Kijé suite, was actually part of a film made in Russia for which they were enticing the Parisian exiled Prokofiev to come back and do a major motion picture. So this sort of music for hire, well, yeah, again, even in the Shostakovich, it wasn't a music for film initially, but it was a suite for jazz orchestra, music for hire. So that brings us into, you know, then the contemporary realm in which, you know, the Victor Choi piece was widely acknowledged as an anti-war protest song, and is probably the most widely covered of any Russian pop songs.
Shostakovich and Prokofiev had to get through the filter of sort of, you know, cultural committees, you know, in the Soviet Union. And so they were having to grapple with this idea of high art and music for the people. How do they get their personal expression out there through these government committees?
The Prokofiev is where you chose the name for the album. Is there a particular reason why you went with Troika?
Well, three major figures, composers. I mean, the Shostakovich, Prokofiev, and Rachmaninoff. And we like the name. And people have come to us now with a variety of interesting interpretations of that word. But I honestly wasn't that familiar with the, you know, the sort of horse and carriage, you know, this three-horse setup in Russia that Prokofiev is referring to with the original music.
And then we have Pentatone's wonderful choice of a stock photo of a railroad bridge, sort of the iron horse version of the horse and carriage.
Of course, there's perestroika and all kinds of other connotations.
Yeah.
But just yesterday, they thought it was a ménage à trois. So anyway, but, it's just Chris and me on the album. There's nobody else on the album.
Let's talk a little bit more about the individual repertoire. Off the top, you've got the Shostakovich Waltz. How does that set the tone for what's to follow? Is there a particular reason why you chose that to be first?
I find it kind of an anthem of our time. I don't know. There's something, the irony in the music. You don't want to know my fantasy when I'm you know, playing it. I mean, I'm in the Oval Office and I'm watching, you know, Kellyanne Conway dance with Kislyak, you know, the Russian ambassador, doing the waltz, and Jared Kushner is, you know, holding DT's hand. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's okay. I'll stop my fantasy right there. But no, it's just it's a wonderful way, I think, to sort of establish the tone of the album, and it's just great melody too.
And the two short pieces associated with the larger works of Shostakovich and Prokofiev, I think, are much better as preludes or overtures to the larger works, whereas the Prokofiev vocalese is much, much better as an encore or an afterglow.
I think many people also will associate, of course, the waltz with Stanley Kubrick's film Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
And so it immediately sort of conjures up a visual.
Tell us a bit about the meatier works on the album, the Prokofiev Cello Sonata and the other works by Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich.
Our personal joke, actually, between Chris and me, when we play this program, you know, that I have to do some virtuosic things in the Prokofiev and Shostakovich as a cellist, and Chris has an equal. I mean, you know, he still has, you know, three times more notes than I do. But in the Rachmaninoff, it's more like maybe 10 to 1 or 15 to 1. So usually at intermission, I sort of relax and I say, well, my work is done, and I can just enjoy it. I can now enjoy the evening, you know, before the Rachmaninoff sonata.
The Prokofiev is really a standout work, written in 1948. It shares the same year as the cello sonata of Elliot Carter and Francis Poulenc. Completely different styles. Almost different genres, and Prokofiev was famously quoted around that time as saying, there is still yet to be written very nice music in C major, and there we are in C major, and nothing could be more clear. Prokofiev started out at the age of 8, and as acerbic as his later music became, he was writing operas at age 8, and so it's the lyrical impulse that really infuses the Prokofiev, and then, of course, you know, the Rachmaninoff. The Shostakovich is, you know, much more of an ironical statement, and actually has some filmic components and some components of personal narrative as well.
He was having an affair, intense affair, with a 20-year-old girl.
Translator.
His translator. And of course, there were some issues with the wife, and she ultimately put a stop to it, and he came back to her. But he was writing this cello sonata as it was all going on. And so you have in the final movement, you can sort of hear the barroom scene with even the barroom piano in the background. And, you know, he's, I don't know if it's autobiographical, but, you know, you can hear the sort of drunken man in the bar, and the wife comes in and
chasing him with a rolling pin or whatever, right?
He's running around. It was supposedly music for a cartoon. I haven't seen the cartoon, but that was the story. And she finally catches up to him and slaps him on the face.
And we actually have the novelization of this relationship between Shostakovich and Roland Carman's wife. Roland Carman was a famous documentarian at the time. William T. Volman, the American writer, won the National Book Award for the book in which Shostakovich is included as a sort of a interior monologue, Leopold Bloom-type character. The book is called Europe Central. I highly recommend it.
Matt, you're known to never turn in a predictable performance, as the New Yorker said. I would think that's a compliment for a performer who is looking to reach a wider audience in the moment. Do you feel that enables you to reach more people when you're doing something a little different each time?
I don't know if I'm reaching more people, but I personally just have to follow that path for myself. You know, it makes my life more interesting. I think I've always fought, if anything gets too routine or too predictable, I've fought to you know, throw that away and move in a different direction. And I have a friend, a cellist, Francis Marie Witte, who has come, you know, she's premiered John Cage and, you know, all kinds of Ligeti and all kinds of wonderful things, new music. And she tells me, you know, whenever anybody follows in my footsteps, I just move further left. And I think I identify with that, with that mentality.
And Christopher, we know you as the host for NPR's From the Top, where you introduce the next generation of classical music stars. You yourself perform this wide range of repertoire. Is that something you feel is important in order to reach this younger generation?
No, I just play what I like. And part of the great kismet is coming into collaboration with Matt, who has similarly wide-ranging passions and tastes in music. And so that's why we've gotten on so well. I just want to mention that, you know, as I've done these arrangements since Radiohead onwards, and then come into contact with Matt, you know, I've been credited on the first record as doing the arrangements, but from the get-go, it's always been a matter of bringing in the arrangements in some raw form, and then Matt invariably finds some way to make more demands on himself than any other cellist, I think, could handle. So whenever we have colleagues asking to share the arrangements, I always think, well, yeah, let's let them have this one. They'll end up in a wheelchair.
Are there particular arrangements you want to do, and then you just decide where you're going to program them?
Well, no, we usually know, you know, if we take on an arrangement, then we know we're going to go through with it. And I don't think we've ever dropped.
No, it's usually a matter of, yeah, I mean, if we have a choice of, you know, I mean, we had a very long short list for Shuffle Play Listen, and then it was a matter of not just whittling it down as far as what songs we liked, but and you know, what songs we listened to 1,000 times, but also, you know, having a pretty good idea of our foot in the door on each one of the arrangements that we've done.